Welcome, everybody, to episode 249 of the Metabolus 2 podcast, which features David.
And Ben. And what are we talking about this episode, Ben?
We are talking about the sexy adventures of Rogue.
Rogue. A new Doctor Rogue. Who. Not penned by Russell T. Davis.
It is not penned by Russell T. Davis. Who is it penned by again? Who are the ladies?
Kate Herron and Briani Redman.
Yeah, who are doing a bunch of stuff for Loki, right? That's what I understand.
Yeah, they are like part of the Marvel Cinematic Universe
team.
Yeah.
And presumably they're Doctor Who fans, right? I don't know much about them.
No.
And I have not done my research, so I still don't know much
about them. It's not about them.
It's about the rogue. It's all about the rogue. I thought this was a great episode. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, you certainly predicted this on the nose that this was coming.
Well, I will tell you how I predicted it.
Mm.
And it's a kind of a circuitous route.
All right.
And I know this episode wasn't written by Russell T. Davis. It's written by some women who I've literally just forgotten their names.
Herron and Redman.
Let's call them Herron and Redman. So they're like Lee and Perrin. Yep. Herron and Redman. Mm-hmm. I know Russell didn't write this, but I know that he's a big comics fan.
Mm-hmm.
And I also know that he's very outspokenly a gay man.
Yes.
And I also know that him and I are roughly the same age. He's a couple of years... Hang on.
Yeah, he's 61, so...
He's 61. Yeah, he's like 3-4 years older than
me.
Okay, so in the 1980s, there was a very, very famous and celebrated gay cartoonist called Oliver Fry,
okay,
who went by the pen name of Zack, if you'd like to look him up. And he did a whole series of really quite hardcore cartoon... comic strips about a sexy young lad called Rogue, who got into all kind of sexy gay escapades with his sexy gay friends. And it suddenly struck me like, hang on, like Rogue, that's like a sexy gay name. That's not like a normal name. By normal, I mean like run-of-the-mill name that you come across every day. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to put it on the line here. I think that Russell T. Davis is a big fan of Zack, a.k.a. Ollie Fry. And he's a big fan of, he was reading Him magazine in the, in the 1980s. And he's a big fan of the Rogue comic strip. And that's why Rogue is called Rogue. And that's why he is the new sexy friend of the Doctor.
I see. Do you think we'll see the Rogue back?
Well, the actors are like he's like a busy actory person, right?
Jonathan Groff, I've never heard of him before. So he's probably as bitty as Shooty is.
Yeah, he's in things. I read an interview. There was an interview with him in DWM, and he was in something. Was it Glee? I think he started out in Glee. In a bunch of other stuff. Apparently, he'd not really heard of Doctor Who before, he got this job. And, I guess if we still keep making this show, I think he had a good time on set. At least he agreed to be interviewed about how he had a good time on set. So, yeah, I'm thinking we're going to... It seems like he's going to be a returning character. Mm-hmm. He's like, I guess he's what Captain Jack / Barrowman...
Yes.
...would have been if it had been 2024 rather than 2006. Or 2005, him and the Doctor have a very, very strong attraction to each other, which is fine, because we know the Doctor has strong attractions to several of his companions,
right?
Or her companions, or their companions. Mm-hmm. Rogue is not yet a companion. Rogue, he needs to change his name. It is too gay, I'm afraid. Rogue.
Part of the gay agenda. Names are too gay now.
Yeah, I feel camp just even saying the word Rogue. but I mean, I think obviously, Rogue should return.
Okay.
Definitely.
They certainly set it up as a potentiality.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially since I think the Doctor is pretty much like Batman now, as you all know, one of Batman's main things, is he doesn't kill people.
Right.
That's what, he's like, oh no, I'm not going to kill you, the Joker. I'm just going to lock you up in prison and then you're going to escape and then we're going to have more adventures together. So, especially since he's not killing I've forgotten their names as well. The evil bird people.
Childer.
The Childer. I like them very much, actually. They've been dropped into some nether dimension, which, you know, of course, Rogue's going to be able... I mean, you know, if the Master can do it, surely someone more popular with the Doctor can do it. So, yeah, Rogue will be back as long as Jonathan Groff is available to be back.
I think as long as we have Groff's availability and Gatwa's availability, I think...
Groff and Gatwa.
We're going to see the return of... The Rogue.
Yeah. Groff and Gatwa, attorneys at law.
So the Rogue character reminded me, obviously, of Captain Jack.
Indeed.
A reboot of Captain Jack, but also a very heavy dose of River Song, too. And I think that's with probably due to the romantic nature of the pairing.
Yes. Good point.
Which you could almost imagine, since River Song did have... regenerative capabilities at one time. I guess maybe she gave them to the Doctor. Perhaps you could look at River's timeline, and perhaps the Rogue is a River Song incarnation.
Oh, but I had not thought of that. Excellent. Yeah.
Probably not, but there was absolutely no familiarity on that part, so definitely not.
But I mean, it also means, you know, the Rogue, that Jonathan Groff need to come back, because Rogue can just regenerate to someone else less sexy. Or more sexy.
Or more sexy.
Either less or more sexy.
If the Rogue has regeneration capabilities.
Yeah.
But the way the reveal that the Doctor was a Time Lord or a timeless child or whatever the Doctor is anymore in the lexicon on the show.
Right.
The Rogue was pretty impressed by it. I think the reaction was, wow.
Right. Well, I think it also points, I think, to... the writers being fans of Doctor Who. Mm-hmm. They obviously know about Captain Jack. They obviously know about River Song. They obviously know about...
Minogue. We got a Kylie song.
Kylie Minogue. they're quite steeped, absolutely should be, which is great, in kind of Doctor Who lore. So, you know, which is good. It was well-informed. If these are guest writers, they were very well-informed on what Doctor Who should be like.
They were well briefed by RTD on what the show, what elements to bring into the show, and that, you know, just even the psychic earrings.
Right,
we have psychic stuff now in Doctor Who, so psychic papers, which also made an appearance in the show.
Of course, yeah.
So I took issue with the Childer's costumes. They seemed the masks seemed very good, but then the character that was played by Indira Varma
from Out of Torchwood, right?
Yeah, the décolletage area, the upper chest area where the feathers ruffled up, it did not look very good. I guess it looked very costumey.
I'll have to confess, I wasn't staring at her chest. So,
well, I guess I was.
indeed, I'd have to watch it again to look at that. But I mean, I thought the masks were excellent. I thought the fact that they were birds was good because, you know.
It fits with RTD's predilection to have aliens that look like animals.
That look like animals, yeah. You know, birds are creepy and, you know, or they can be, especially when they're that size. Mm-hmm. And, you know, to have the... And again, I think this plays to the, you know, the writer's, you know, expertise in this area of fiction. You know, the fact that it was explained away as cosplay, you know, which is obviously something that the kids do.
Yeah, I have a question about that.
Oh, okay.
Now, is that really cosplay? I mean, your daughter, your oldest, is involved in the cosplay scene.
Absolutely, 100%.
It seemed more like live-action role-play than costume.
More
cosplay.
LARPing.
Yeah.
Yeah, more LARPing than cosplay. I guess that's true. I suppose, having just said that they're literate in this area, maybe they felt that LARPing would be too much of a explanation.
Well, they did throw in the Dungeons & Dragons reference with the dice.
Well,
so
I suppose so, yeah.
They were trying to hit a lot of cultural things that is down with the kids, I guess.
Yeah, Bridgertons,
yeah.
LARPings, cosplayings, Dungeons & Dragons. Everyone knows how much the kids love Dungeons & Dragons nowadays.
Fifth edition, yep.
There you go. I don't know. Yeah, I mean, that's a good point. That's a point well made. Though, I mean, you know, the lead writers on Loki, I mean, they must know about cosplay at this point, surely.
Yeah. Well, they've gone enough Comic-Cons to...
Yeah, exactly. I mean, they must have gone
seen cosplay.
more Comic Cons than you can shake a stick at, if they're part of the Marvel Cinematic Writing Team.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, what did you think of the whole Bridgerton setup, the whole Regency?
I think obviously it's trying to tie into what is contemporary and popular now, but I think it's also signpost how much relevancy that early 1800 period is. It's no longer Jane Austen. It is Bridgerton. It's a reinterpretation. History has been reclaimed or readapted, and the touchstone is Bridgerton, not Jane Austen.
Right. Yeah, that's a good point.
And if we just even look as far back to Moffat with Capaldi era, this, I think, predates Bridgerton. It was Jane Austen, like Clara snogged Jane Austen, and Thin Ice seemed to reference more Jane Austen than Bridgerton. And this was ethnically blind casting, and as is Bridgerton, and it fits. I know nothing about Bridgerton beyond that, but it seemed to fit within the Bridgerton universe.
Yeah, no, I know nothing about Bridgerton either. I think it's interesting that they were in Bridgerton.
Yes.
They weren't in Regency England. Mm-mm. And I think that's kind of an interesting thing. I mean, obviously, within the show, they weren't literally in Bridgerton, though it's entirely possible they might be. though I guess Bridgerton's a Netflix show, isn't it? It's not Disney Plus.
Well, they did reference that it was broadcast, and that's how these children saw it. They wanted to go cosplay. They picked up on the television transmissions of some sort.
But as you said, you know, the touch point for this is another TV show.
Mm-hmm.
Which and not the historic reality, whatever that reality was, of, you know, Regency England. Though, you know, I mean, again, you know, Doctor Who is notoriously plays fast and loose with its historical accuracy.
Well, it also plays fast and loose with entering the land and realms of fiction, too.
Lands of fiction, yeah.
So that's really not any kind of reach for Doctor Who. It's to
Absolutely
go, we're
going
to go into a fictional universe.
Yeah, fictional universe, or we'll just go into a pretend, you know, we'll just do a pretend history, you know, like the Time Warrior or, you know, Meddling Monk times.
Right.
You know, it's, you know, whatever suits the story.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what always, you know, really grinds my gears about the Meddling Monk is, you know, pretty much the first thing that happens in that story is the Doctor picks up a Viking helmet. And it's not a Viking helmet. It's got great big horns on it. Vikings didn't have horns on their helmets.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone knows this.
It's a space helmet for a cow, I thought.
But apparently it's a space helmet for a cow. So anyway.
In this episode, the Doctor, I think, specifically alluded to that we're in the Bridgerton universe and that Ruby name checked it twice. And that's her cultural reference to the Regency period is Bridgerton. So
yeah, she's got streaming.
That's fine. It's all about gossip, intrigue.
So here's a question. Were you taken in by the rogue? Did you feel that he wasn't, that he was that he was a bad character and was going to shoot the Doctor?
No.
Or did you twig that he was going to be a good character in the end?
I didn't really care that much. I didn't. the character didn't do much for me. To be honest with you, the episode I felt was really contrived, and there wasn't much of a plot. And I was just sort of like, if you are really into character relationships and seeing the Doctor snog companions or guest artists,
friends,
and this is. Then this is what you're looking for in Doctor Who. But this is a far cry from Boy's Own Adventure plotting that I kind of like in my Doctor Who.
Fair enough.
I totally expected the twist that Emily Beckett, I think was the character's name, that turned in to be one of these Childer birds
and
was trying to take over Ruby. Sure, okay. And then all of a sudden we had battle dancing, and it's just like, it was signpost that this was going to happen in. It didn't even seem like a throwaway joke at the beginning. Don't activate the battle function of the earrings. Just sort of like everything just kind of seemed very tunnel and fitting very much. And it sort of like, well, this is, like you said, if this was 20 years ago, this was Captain Jack.
Yeah, I mean, I will definitely concede this episode is not rocket science.
Mm-hmm.
It's not even really a lot of character development either.
Well, the character development is the doctor is attracted to the rogue, a man. So we have a male and male dance. We have a male and male kiss. And that is what this episode's about more than anything else. And that's fine. It's just not what I really am watching Doctor Who for. I'm not looking for, like, the girl in the fireplace where I snog Madame Pompadour. I just, those episodes don't really do much for me at all, other than going, I'm really out of touch with who this target audience is anymore.
Yeah. I mean, I was very much reminded, actually, thinking about it, of the third Doctor era and Joe Grant, where, you know, there'd be a love attraction between her and, you know, Peladon or right. Latep or whoever that would right. take, you know, 5 minutes to happen and then 5 minutes to be resolved. And Joe Grant would always throw herself into, you know, oh, no, sacrifice me.
Right.
Don't sacrifice the Doctor or the Doctor's friend. So the character development was on that level, I felt, which is fine because I think, you know, that's always been the character development.
Yeah.
I think in certainly in Classic Who. I think possibly in New Who, we've been promised, you know, better, well, not better, deeper character development, possibly. Mm-hmm. But obviously the thrust of the drama was to have the Doctor, you know, find someone of ostensibly the same sex to be attracted to.
Right.
Or certainly within the show, they don't have to be the same sex, but certainly as actors, they are the same sex.
Presenting as male, attracted exactly. as male. So similar genders, whatever gender alignment you want to do with Time Lord, that's what we got.
That's what we're getting here, exactly. Yep.
And beyond that, what failed for me is this is the penultimate story before the season end. And I don't have that tension build up. Maybe that's not desirable from RTD's standpoint, but it doesn't seem like the Susan Twist mystery with just the portrait is enough. And the portrait had very little likeness, at least to Susan Twist.
Yeah, I was expecting, you know, Susan Twist to be, you know, there's plenty of old ladies that she could have been.
Or at least dancing.
Yeah, like a dancing. Like she could have just swirled past and like, oh, hang on, and swirled away again.
Mm-hmm. Or a servant or something.
Yeah, or a servant. Yeah, I mean, I guess, you know, where we were is that Ruby is beginning to notice that this is someone that they see every time.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe, you know, if she'd seen an actual human Twist, she would have gone like, who that? Hang on, who are you?
Right.
So maybe, you know, we just. But I mean, I agree with you. There's a lot of heavy lifting to do for the next two episodes.
Mm-hmm. I feel like the whole toy maker maestro, the beast and the boss. I mean, the rogue said he was working for the boss. I think. I think that line was saying.
Okay.
Maybe I misheard. I only watched this once last night because I'm just swamped by real life type things. But
well, why not? Yeah.
But is there a connection there, or I'm not sure what the takeaway here is going into the two-part season finale.
Yeah. Other than the fact, of course, you know, if Rogue is working for the boss, then he must be working for the biomorphic organizational system supervisor.
Stevens? His real name is Stevens.
Yeah, there you go.
Rogue Stevens. Stevens Rogue.
Stevens.
Rogue Stevens. It would have been cool if the voice of Rogue's ship computer was the same as Boss.
That would have been cool. That would have been a deep cut for fans. And while we're talking about the show, which we are, why don't we address the deep cut for fans? What do you think of the Schalke Doctor appearing?
I could have done without.
How am I not surprised that that's your reaction? Oh. Yeah, it seemed like...
Viewer, how
nothing.
Come the great intelligence is in there?
True, which is confusing for the casual viewer. And you're going to have to be a fan, and not just a regular fan, but like a fan to like go, hang on, that's Richard E. Grant. That's not the great intelligence, obviously, and it's certainly not... It's certainly not with Neil and I. It must be the Schalke Doctor.
I wish he would have put in Rowan Atkinson then too, and Hugh Grant. You know, it's just sort of like,
of course, yes.
Anyone and everyone is the Doctor anymore. We've blown away the whole Hartnell through whatever incarnation regeneration we are now. I again go back to what I said last year sometimes, every new doctor, every new showrunner, or every returning showrunner, it becomes a new show. There is no continuity between this other than you have the TARDIS, the console, and maybe some reoccurring monsters. But even those monsters aren't used in the same way.
Right. No, absolutely fair. And I think the only thing, the only conclusion that one draws is that, it's like... I can't remember which episode it is now, when Absalom Dark appeared on the screen in the TARDIS and we were all like, oh, it's Absalom Dark, and then he goes away again. Mm-hmm. I mean, I read speculation online that, oh yeah, we're in a fictional universe thanks to the Toymaker, therefore the Schalker Doctor is like, real.
Sure.
Blah, blah, blah. Yeah, which is entirely possible, but there's going to be no payoff for this. Yeah, the Schalker Doctor Richard E. Grant isn't going to turn up. in the show, though apparently I read that they did a special photo shoot for him to get his image in the show. It wasn't just a screen grab from
something else
somewhere.
With Nail and I,
from With Nail and I, or any other thing, or Saltburn or whatever Richard E. Grant has been in recently. It's a deep cut for fans. And as I said, you're going to have to be a fan to know what's going on there.
I kind of wonder if it was a deep cut for one person, and that person being Paul Cornell.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
They're all friends, Cornell,
right.
RTD, Moffat, etc. I just wonder if it was, let's put Richard E. Grant in there and canonize the Schalke Doctor.
Yeah.
You could have put Nick Briggs in there. He played the Doctor. It's just...
Well, if you... Yeah, I mean, if you follow Rob Ritchie on Twitter, he's done a redo of that scene and put all of the Curse of the Fatal Death Doctors in there, and Nick Briggs, and, basically everybody.
I mean, a couple April Fools ago, he did Toast of London as the Doctor. Well, I mean, you could...
Yeah, he put Matt Berry in there as well. So
sure,
yeah.
why not?
Yeah, why not? Exactly, yeah.
So,
yeah.
I mean, to me, it's become ridiculous, and... The show's becoming too self-referential.
Okay.
So that's my take on it.
Okay. Yeah. No, fair enough. I enjoyed it on an equal level to last week's. I had a lot of fun watching it. I liked the invisible spaceship. That was reminding me of Skagra's invisible spaceship.
Of course.
And also it's kind of reminding me, come to think of it, of the Family of Blood's invisible spaceship. Especially
there was a heavy dose of Family of Blood in this too.
Especially the Childer family. Yeah, they're a family. They're going to be banished to some dimension, which again actually connects to your insight about Paul Cornell possibly. It's like Russell kind of tipping the wink to one of his mates, which is again sort of fair enough-ish.
Sure,
but yeah. Yeah, so those are my thoughts, basically. It was a good 45 minutes or so of young person sci-fi.
Yeah.
Whether it was 100% Doctor Who, I think we've all agreed at this point, there is so much Doctor Who that basically you can have whatever you want.
True.
And you don't have to really not like any bit that you don't like, because you can always go and watch a bit that you do like, because there's 60 years of it or so. And I think this is, the clincher for me is whether we can all stick the landing in the next 2 weeks.
Yeah, I'm hoping so. I'm hoping it's not going to be one of RTD's silly, over-the-top finales, but that would be uncharacteristic of Davis, so we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I mean, I think it would be... he seems to kind of move past that a little bit. They were going to be dragging the Earth across the universe using the TARDIS. Sarah Jane's going to come back, all that kind of stuff. I think maybe he's not really kind of doing that stuff anymore. Maybe he is, who knows. But yeah.
Now, were you convinced by Millie Gibson's playing a Childer, playing Ruby Sunday bit at the end?
Yeah. I didn't really need to be convinced because I knew that I knew it was her. So you see what I mean?
Right.
I mean, I think for someone who's perhaps less... I mean, I'm not saying that I'm some kind of genius, but someone who's, watched fewer of these kind of shows, i.e. someone younger than me, I'm sure they would have been convinced because they don't know what's going to happen. I totally know what's going to happen, basically, that it's all going to turn out all right in the end. She is not dead and being childerized. So I'm guessing by your question that you weren't convinced.
I don't know if I was convinced or not, but I'm surprised the Cholder were convinced, because the Duchess, the Indira Varma character, wanted to play dress as Ruby. And I don't know. It just seemed like they all accepted that it was all the other Cholder were in bird form. But now here's Ruby who's playing along. And it just seemed weird.
You know what Ruby should have done?
Yeah.
She should have got out her pocket knife and skinned the dead Childer.
Well, she wasn't dead. She just had a busted beak.
Well, that's true. Okay. Well, she should have stabbed the Childer to death. And then, like Hannibal Lecter, she should have skinned its face and then worn its face like a mask.
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah.
A little too dark
hardcore.
For this episode of Doctor Who.
Do you think it's a little too dark for this episode, Doc 2? I don't think it's too dark at all.
Not dark
I think
enough.
That's what should have happened. Yeah, I think that's what should have happened.
Yeah, sure. All right. Yeah, well,
I'm joking.
yeah, did not see that coming.
Yeah, well, no, exactly. Wow. Like, Ruby's turned into Hannibal Lecter at this point.
So I'm going to leave that there. Leave that on the table. And we could not have the voice of Boss be the voice of the Rogues. Computer
because
ship computer because John Dirth died in 1984, age 63.
Well, he died in 1984.
Yeah, so yeah,
wow.
Long time ago.
Well, that's why he's not turned up in any big finishes anytime recently.
Yep,
goodness.
He died very young. He was Lupton in Planet of the Spiders, but
indeed,
I didn't realize he was also Boss.
I think I knew that he was both. And actually, come to think of it, he didn't look very well as Lupton.
No, he didn't. He looked
very
like he
pasty.
Was about to.
Well, yeah. I'm sure, like everybody, I'm sure he was on like 200 cigarettes a day or something. you know, like poor old Michael Wisher. I mean, I think they were all smoking like chimneys at that particular period. Oh well, never mind. They should have got someone who could do impressions, do an impression of his voice, so we can still have the Boss. I don't know. Maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah. Goodness.
Right.
Okay. I think we differ a little bit.
A mixed decision here. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We're differing. We're differing in a friendly way.
Yeah.
I thought this was a very enjoyable episode of the new Doctor Who, and you, I think, as you've been pointing out as we've been reviewing these, is that it's in some ways it's becoming more and more obvious to you that this is not a show that's for you particularly.
Yeah, which there's no problem with it. I have no problem with Doctor Who moving
exactly.
in a different direction.
Yeah.
It's just sort of like I feel my age watching it, and it's not the subject. It's just that I think drama has moved around from the adventure to it's almost like a sitcom to me in a way, rather than the Saturday afternoon adventure show.
Right,
if
right.
that makes any sense.
Yeah, no, that's fair enough. No, that makes sense. I mean, I think you know everyone's background in writing British soap operas just really plays into that, basically.
Good point.
You know, it's soap in space. It's East End. It's Coronation Street in space. And you know, you've even got Angie from the Old Vic. EastEnders, obviously not Coronation Street. You know, he's a major, apparently some kind of major character. Though we're not sure what kind of major character she is yet, because no one has told us.
Maybe she's a major in unit.
She's deep, deep undercover. I mean, you know, we've got like Mel coming back and unit coming back.
Mm-hmm.
And what's her name from the Meep episodes coming back?
Rose. Yep.
Rose Noble coming back. So presumably, you know, Mrs. Noble's going to be back. And Kate Lethby-Stewart's is back. And... yeah, there's a lot to pack in the next 2 weeks. It's going to be over 2 weeks, right? They're not going to broadcast two episodes at the same time.
That's a good question. I think they're going to do it over 2 weeks. And the question for me is this going to be a story where Gatwa does not cry as the Doctor?
He certainly. I was watching for the telltale tear streaming down his cheek, and there it was.
I thought this might indicate some inner sadness or something. I just think that your observation that he can cry on command, or he has that capacity.
Good at crying, yeah.
He is using that, and
yeah.
I'm not sure how I feel about that right now.
I'm going to go further than you. I'm going to say he's overusing that facility at this point.
Mm-hmm.
I really would like, and I'm certainly fine if I don't get this. I'd like him to show a little bit more light and shade as the character. And by light and shade, I mean, you know, Capaldi style. There's some irritation there with everyone else. You know, he's the smartest man in the room always. Smartest person in the room.
A little too much love and hun for you?
A little bit too much loving for me.
We're going to have a lot of loving, I think, coming,
a whole lot of
coming next episode.
A whole lot of loving coming the next episode. And, you know, I like my doctor to be have some rough edges. Just some pathos in there would be, I think, would be nice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it doesn't have to be, you know, first Colin Baker season level, you know, nasty, but some distance.
It seems like he has only two real emotions, sad and crying, and then like aloof, flirty.
Yeah, well, I'm going to say three emotions. He's got, I'm sad and I'm going to cry. I'm all sexy and I'm going to flirt with you. And I'm really, we're going to have a party right now. And the party's all about me, which are fine. those are three great emotions. And, you know, we've already had the idea of this bi regeneration where the sad bitch of the Doctor has sloughed off into the 14th Doctor, who's now living, you know, like Sherlock Holmes on the South Downs, keeping bees with all his friends. And you know, now we've only got the happy Doctor. But, you know, there's going to have to be there should be a crash at some point for this to remain dramatically interesting.
We kind of had a dip with Boom, where he was intense. Was he crying in Boom?
Oh, yeah, he wept in Boom, yeah. No,
okay.
I remember that. I've seen All Boom right. a couple of times now, so yeah, right. No, he definitely wept in that.
Has your neighbor Lo seen Dot and Bubble yet?
No, she was not able to come over this Sunday, so
okay.
We will have to see what her reaction is. We've not seen 79 yards yet.
73 yards, yep.
Yeah, whatever, the yards, yeah. Sorry. I can't remember those yards
either. I was thinking about that. It's probably your lack, like rugby and football, don't they use imperial measurements for their pitches or whatever?
They do. They
so
do.
Perhaps your non-sportiness, maybe Millie is a big rugby and a football fan.
I'm sure Millie Gibson, old Ruby Sundays.
Ruby,
huge.
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, that's, Ruby
with,
is a
with
huge
the name,
rugby
Ruby
fan.
And I, yeah, that's another
Ruby,
thing. I
Millie,
keep getting
yeah.
the names conflated.
I think this is actually, this is something else that I think is kind of interesting. There is definitely a lot more, I mean, I guess the Doctor has always been played by an actor just playing themselves. But mm-hmm. there's a real merging between, I mean, a real kind of overt merging between the character of the Doctor and the character of the actor and the character of the Doctor's companion, the character of the actor who plays the Doctor's companion.
Mm-hmm.
I'm finding it relatively hard to... Like is this just Shutigawa, right? Doing some things like he does normally.
It seems like it because of what I've seen in interviews
right.
of him.
Yeah.
Of course, we don't know either Gibson or Gatwa, but it does seem like they are just acting naturally, playing themselves rather
just
than playing
being
a
themselves.
Character.
Yeah. Which, as I said, you know, has always been something that Doctor Who has always kind of been sort of doing that. Certainly, you know, someone like Tom Baker, you know, notoriously.
Even John Pertwee. I mean,
even John Pertwee, yeah.
Hartnell and Troughton played characters.
Yes, exactly.
Davison, I think, played a character. Colin Baker, he is kind of prickly in real life from what I can tell.
Yeah, he is prickly in real life.
And McCoy kind of played himself too in many
ways.
Yeah,
McCoy played himself. McGann was playing a character. McGann's a good actor. Are we going to go through each one?
No, it's fine.
I mean, I think it ding-dongs between that, but I think we really are. This could be Shutigawa's Adventures in Time and Space with his friend Millie Gibson.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think anyone would disagree that that is what is happening. So mm-hmm. anyway, but we'll see. I mean, you know, we got a big finale. There's a scary Susan Twist with a big horn singing out of her face and stuff in one of the trailers. Uh-huh. So, you know, that's all exciting.
One last question about Rogue.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Drama. With when Beckett and Barton were in the library that Millie kind of interrupted them.
Right.
And they're both shoulders.
Right.
I'm assuming at that point. Is that kind of incestuous?
I don't know. I mean, I guess they really were doing the full LARP at that point. They were playing the characters.
Yeah.
That they had as, you know, that they were cosplaying as. I mean, they're birds, right? I mean, you know, birds will have sex with any other bird as long as it's the same species. You know, they're not fussy.
I don't know.
Yes, I think it was definitely incestuous, but they're birds, right. So it's fine.
So,
so that's my answer to you. That's my answer to your question.
Anyways. So, yes, we get Unit back. We get Mel. We get a big Marvel Doctor Who cinematic universe reunion at the end.
Tower and thing, yeah.
We'll see. It is Marvel writ large.
S-Triad, an anagram of TARDIS.
There you go.
That's misdirection. I'm certain that's not going to be a thing. Or am I? I don't know. I mean, we'll find out. We'll find out tomorrow on Friday.
Yep.
Yeah, and then the following Friday we'll finish it, and then it'll be like, wow, okay, back to normal before Christmas.
Yeah, and then we got to talk about dear William Russell.
We have got to talk
who we
about
met.
Which we did. We need to talk about William. Okay, two things we need to do, and this is not podcast material, but what are we going to do next? We need to do William Russell because he was awesome,
mm-hmm.
And I was not surprised that he was dead, but I was sad that he was dead because, you know, he was.
99 years.
It's a very good innings, yeah. Almost exactly the same age as my dad, in fact, who's been dead a long time now, I realize. We've also got to do the new Toymaker animation.
Yeah, that's en route for me right now. So, yeah, it'll be, we're going way back to the Hartnell era and to discussing the new animation and the actor who played Ian Chesterton.
Chippenfield. I don't know. Anyway, yes. Whatever he was called.
Chatterfield.
Chatterfield, that's it.
Caterpillar.
Caterpillar. Thank you, everybody, for listening to our podcast.
All right. Thank you for listening to episode 249 of the Metabulous 2 podcast. I have been contemplating what kind of bird I would cosplay with, Ben.
And I have suddenly become concerned about bird sex, thanks to David's final questions.
Well, that would probably laid a flat egg. Laid an egg on the
podcast. There you go. Laid an egg on the whole podcast there. All right.
Farewell,
everybody.
Bye.
Bye.